Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt.
And with us today is Davis Graham. Davis has taken a learning issue that kept him from getting an education and turned that around to empowering him to become educated using technology. Welcome, Davis.
Thank you. Thank you very much, John. And thank you, Clayton. Thank you so much.
So, Davis, why don't you give us a little introduction to yourself, a little bit of your history and how you've gotten to where you are today.
Okay, a brief bio. I was growing up, we lived here in Bradenton, Florida, and then we moved over to Saudi Arabia, where my dad was working for Aramco Oil Company, and they really started getting frustrated with my learning. I was about age 7 or 8. So when we came back to the United States, I was tested at the University of Miami in 1967 and diagnosed with dyslexia. And so from then on, my education was pretty much determined by the disability that I had. I went to a different alternative school where I was on Ritalin, and it was a kind of one flew over the cuckoo's nest school. I eventually got pulled out and then mainstreamed, and then went through high school, told I'd never make it in college, which to any dyslexic, the word can't is a barbed wire word. And so I was determined to finish college. I ended up at Westminster in Fulton, Missouri on a learning disability program. Eventually transferred to Swanee, University of the South. And then from Swanee transferred to USF. I found out at 1980, one or 82, that I had actually was academically suspended from USF and academically suspended from Swanee, although my parents held this Swanee letter from me because they felt I wouldn't be able to handle it emotionally. But they couldn't prevent the USF, so they delivered both letters at the same time. And I got out of going to school for 2 years, realized that the nightclub scene was not a place to raise a family. I wasn't married, obviously, but it wasn't a place or career that would get me where I wanted to go. So I ended up going back to school at USF, told I should change majors. I said, why? And I was a second semester junior, and they said, you need to make a 3.0 to graduate. And that's not make a 3.0 and graduate with a 3.0, but graduate with a grade level that was enough to allow me to graduate. So I went back to school, and I took all the help I could get. There was a woman by the name of Chris Martin at Sarasota campus that said, look, I don't know anything about dyslexia. Tell me what you need. Tell me about your disability. And then for the first time in my LD career, learning disability career, somebody asked me, okay, well, what do you need? And so I needed a note taker. I needed my books on tape. Now I get them digital. And I graduated with a 3.0 to bring my grade level up to a GPA of 2.0. And I graduated from USF with a BA in psychology. Worked in Washington, D.C., vowed never to go back to school, started tutoring kids in 2001 when I'd moved back to Bradenton, Florida, and was offered to go back to school in 2013 at Brandeis University is where I picked. The main reason I went back to school is because I thought, well, if I'm telling these kids they can make it with assistive technology, I started using text-to-speech in 2001. I told them they could make it, then I better walk the talk. So I went back to Brandeis University, focused on a master's of science in health and medical informatics. And 3 years later, full-time job, family, children, four children with my wife, ages now 14 to 9. Graduated with a 4.0 academic honors, student marshal. They give out two academic honors a year, and student marshal is one of them. And I then knew, you know what? Education is a new area for all people that are struggling. And so that's where I am. I reached out to a friend became a colleague, Matthew Schneps from, he ran the Harvard Visual Labs. And I said, you know, when I read with text to speech, my brain doesn't feel like the Homer Simpson brain that you see at dyslexics when they read, which are these kind of little spots, you know, that show up on a functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI. And I said, and I was in the radiology business. I said, has there ever been any research? And he said, no, but we'd be interested. So we wrote a vision statement. We collaborated with John. John Gabrielli was the neuroscientist for the MIT vision statement, and Mark Crawford, Eric Crawford, who was the department head of Matthew Schneps's division. And we wrote a vision statement and for research on just that. But it was during that time that I realized that reading has only been commonplace for 200 years. And yet we've based our whole education system off of reading and writing. And it's only 200 years really where it's been commonplace. And so there's got to be, there's something there. And so with text to speech, our brains can actually process four times more information than you and I are talking. And we talked about this when we met at the Code Camp in Tampa, is that I speed my podcast up to two times. And I actually talked to somebody that speeds it up even faster with a different program. But our brains are built to absorb information. And Matthew Schneps's technology or research has found that actually our auditory network is underutilized. And so when you realize that, now you realize what technology can do in education.
Well, congratulations on your degree and your honors. That's fantastic.
Thank you very much. It's just paving the way for others behind me. And I don't wear it as a badge. I wear it as a map. You know, look, follow this direction. And there's a future in education for those that think they struggle.
Yeah, Clayton and I recently took a road trip where he was listening to his podcasts. What speed were your podcast set to?
I believe I was at 2x on the way there, and then we went up to 2.5x on the way back.
Yeah, so since then I've been listening at 2x as well. I know John Sonmez said that he's up to 3x now when he's listening. Yeah, it's amazing the amount of information that you can take in and how quickly.
And I think that there's a lot to there's a lot right there in that statement for the developer world that all text, and it depends on the speaker. You guys will agree with that. Now at Code Camp, I used Paul Harvey. You could speed him up to 6x and still understand them. But our brains, the way we write, there's a lot of fluff, but then there's conceptual things. So I see the future where the algorithms of reading acceleration programs or text to speech will speed up during that fluff, slow down during the concepts, dive in, give you the opportunity to dive in and see that place, that person, or read about that thing that you don't know about. So I think it's really cool.
So why don't we take a step back and just kind of educate our listeners on dyslexia? What are the common misconceptions that people have, or the common understandings that we think we know and may be incorrect? Are there differences depending on the individual? How does that affect people?
I think it's a spectrum disorder. Meaning that some people say, well, I'm dyslexic, but I'm not that dyslexic. Matthew Schneps is stated that to me. I read in the percentile I read actually the psychologist that did my testing for me to get accommodations at Brandeis said I was below the 1 percentile when it comes to reading. So if you gave me something to read, I would perform read for you, but I wouldn't comprehend it. But I read at 69 words a minute. On average, people read between 250 to 300 words per minute. The misconceptions, I don't know that there's, number one, 40% of self-made millionaires in this country are dyslexic. They call it the MIT disease.
Yeah, I think I saw what, like Steve Jobs. What are some of the others?
Right. Churchill, Charles Schwab, Toby Cosgrove, head of Cleveland Clinic, Whoopi Goldberg, a lot of actors. What you find is that people have mastered things outside of reading, such as acting, and juvenile detention is full of learning disabled kids. They've figured out how to steal a car. You know, it depends on where their family structure, where the people in their lives, like, you know, the girls club or the boys and girls club or Big Brother comes in and may steer them into a direction that turns them into an entrepreneur. 35% of entrepreneurs in this country are dyslexic. Now, an interesting thing is I heard the UK, it's 20% of entrepreneurs. And I embraced that with the failure rate. So flipping of words, what a dyslexic really does is I'm an orthogonal thinker through a skill called interconnective reasoning. So a teacher put CAT on the board to me. And if I didn't know what CAT stood for and the teacher asked me, then I would take that C and I'd turn it into a U. I'd turn it up, you know, a different way. I'm trying to figure out what that symbol is. There's only two languages that are written that directly relate to what the image of the letter or symbol is, and that's music. You go up two bars, you go up two keys, and then Chinese, which is written in pictograms. So you see that's when it becomes a learning disability, is that when you're trying to apply that beautiful skill of taking something, tearing it apart in your head and putting it back together, manipulating and turning it around, putting it back together. When you put that into requiring a person to be measured by how well they read and how well they write, then it becomes a learning disability.
And you, I think you had started to allude to utilizing technology in your quest for learning and knowledge. How did that come about? You said you had reached out to find out if there were any studies that you could be a part of, or how did that come about?
With dyslexia, there used to be a thing called the RFBD, which was Reading for the Blind Dyslexic, that was audio tapes. And when the computer system came out in 2001, I was in radiology. I was reading a film contract, and it was probably going to take me at least a couple of hours to read the film contract. And I thought, gosh, isn't there something online that reads text from text to speech? And so I wrote text reading software, and up popped this Thunder Bay, Ontario program called Read Please. And so as soon as you copy something, it pastes it into Read Please and it turns it into a voice, and it reads and it highlights the text as it goes across. So that was my first exposure. So then I would go out and get the Wall Street Journal, and I'd scan it into the printer, an OCR, and turn it into a text-rich format, and then I'd plug it into Read Please and read it. I did that with my contracts or my leases. And so now I started reading at high rates of speed because I anticipate what's coming. I see the words. I hear it. My spelling got better. I mean, it changed my life. So that's how I got. Now, then fast forward to 2016, I turned to a guy that used a program. His name's Matthew Schneps at MIT. MIT, but he was at Harvard Visual Labs, and he was commenting on a software which I use called Voice Dream Reader with Bookshare. Bookshare is a library for print disabled. And I reached out to him and I said, you know, when I look at the functional magnetic resonance images of brains of dyslexic people, and it looks like Homer Simpson, you know, like nothing's happening. And I, you know, which is really actually pretty funny, is that you're measuring a brain that already, you know, doesn't read. So, of course, nothing's happening. But I said, when I read with text to speech, it's like a movie going across my head, much like audiobooks are to people. And I said, has there ever been a study done on dyslexia as to the neuroplasty, which is the brain using different parts to deal with different ways of information coming in? And he said, no. And so we did a vision. He said, let me go to Eric Coffer, who was in his department head for massive open online courses, MOOC. And he said, let me see if we'd be interested. And he came back, we are interested. And so it was a research project that had a $1.5 million funding. And John Gabrielli, who's the neuroscientist, was involved, put on the vision statement. So it was John Gabrielli, Eric Coffer, Matthew Schneps, and myself. And it was from reading the work that Matthew Schneps has done and John Gabrielli, when I realized, it was like a light bulb went off. Number one, education. Why? Not only, you know, 50% of Americans cannot read above an eighth grade reading level. And so these are literacy statistics. And I thought, well, these are the kids that are coming to these schools. So it's not only for the dyslexics, it's for a lot of kids. And that reading, John Gabrielli points out in the dyslexic paradox, is that reading has only been commonplace for 200 years. And I thought, for only 200 years? And he says, it's one of the most difficult skills you can ever teach. And you are putting the whole foundation of education on how well you can read and how well you can write, not by how well you can gain knowledge and how well you can express knowledge. And Matthew Schnepp says that our audio network is underutilized, but our visual network, the processing of taking images off of a piece of paper or screen and processing through it, decoding it and putting it into your database, slows down the process immensely. Where you and I are talking right now, it's going straight into your database. Where if it was reading, you'd have to take it off a piece of paper through your eyes, that kind of stuff. So that has made what I think this process, and now this technology where you can read up to 700, everybody, not everybody, but most people can understand up to 600 words a minute. That's why you have those commercials, especially the pharmaceuticals, where they blah, 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 at the end, you know. So, but now you have the capability of delivering that. And now, as you all talked about, 2 times a podcast, things along those lines, 6 times podcast, what you're doing is you're shortening the classroom time, but with the same volume of information. And now our education model is becoming obsolete.
When we were speaking at Tampa Code Camp, at the speaker's dinner, you had mentioned in some of your struggles and difficulties, you had hit a really low point in your life. Do you want to share some of that with us, or is that common amongst individuals that have difficulties with dyslexia or other issues?
This is something that is hardly ever talked about, but I'm going to give you some statistics. 50% of successful suicides for children under the age of 15, 50% have a learning disability. NIH study done by Sally Shaywitz from Yale say that 80% of learning disabled are dyslexic. 32% of dyslexics don't graduate from high school. 50% of juvenile detention has a learning disability, of which 80% have dyslexia. 60% of adolescents in drug and alcohol rehab have a learning disability, and 80% are dyslexic. So yes, I have been through that. And the reason, so I used to try to numb my the shadow of failure that follows you around, because, you know, I went to a school, they said, oh, Davis hadn't taken his Davis pill yet, or, you know, Davis here, read this, and, you know, pretty soon you would build barriers. So I was a people person, and I could create a barrier so that I would keep people away from coming into the inner sanctum of that I couldn't read like them. And if you read my teacher's progress reports, you know, it's, man, he's really got some problems, blah, blah, blah. And I felt it all the time. And it's like a shark in the water that, you know, is always there. And what happens is you try to numb that failure with everything you can. And up to the point of, you know, there was a time in college where I knew there was a failure letter coming. I've gotten two academic suspensions. One's from University of the South at Suwanee, Tennessee, and USF here in Tampa. And I knew those sharks were out there. And I thought about ending my life. I remember I stayed a spring break afterwards, and I had it mapped out. And a psychologist recently asked me, you know, well, why didn't you follow through with it? And I thought, you know what? It was because I knew it would be probably one of the most selfish things. It'd create more questions than it would leave answers. And that my parents didn't expect anything from me except my best. And I have a brother that's internal medicine, now an orthopedic surgeon. My sister's a family practitioner. My other sister's an attorney. My other sister went to graduate school for aquaculture. And then my wife, brilliant, is a school teacher with a master's in mathematics. And so there, I was not being compared by my parents. I was the one comparing myself. And I think that is taking place now in our school systems.
Yeah, I think there's a quote that's most often attributed to Albert Einstein, that something about everybody is a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life thinking it's stupid, or something to that effect.
Right. And he's, by the way, they say, was dyslexic. You know, most of, if you look at his theories, they're all in pictograms, which is really, really cool.
So how do we avoid pigeonholing our learning and our teaching so that we're not dependent on just judging individuals, judging students on their reading and comprehension, and move more towards, well, away from judging, but moving more towards just pure learning and helping students to grow and to mature?
I had done this opt-ed, and this person said, so you're saying basically to get rid of reading and writing? I said, no, supplement. Supplement, if education is really about teaching people new ideas and giving them the opportunity to learn, then use whatever tools that are out there. You take, you know, any survival, anything that's a survival movie, or even these survival things. People make things out of things that they need to survive. They put out there in the woods with nothing, and they turn a stick into a fishing hook, you know. So ingenuity is something we incorporate into our daily lives. The paperclip, right? It's like one of the key inventions of the world. You know, I can do this with a paperclip or a clothes hanger. Use what it takes. Now technology is here. It's proven. The research is proven. This reading acceleration programs can increase the reading speed of normal readers by 50% without loss of comprehension. Let's use it. You guys are using podcasts at a higher rate. Let's implement that into the schools. Think of what it does. It gives the student more time to data mine, do total immersion, you know, deep learning, drill down. If you don't know where 10 Prince Albert Street is in Glasgow, Scotland, then go there via Google Maps, and you can actually walk around. So that's where it's here. It's moving the Audubon of technology that we experience every day into the school zone system of education.
So text-to-speech has been probably the biggest number one factor in helping share information. What other avenues for us as technologists can we help individuals that may have difficulty in reading and learning?
Right. Speech. So there's speech to text and text to speech. And speech to text, almost everybody uses untexting. I've seen it a lot where people talk into their phone instead of typing. And Stanford University just did a recent race, and speech to text is faster than actually texting. And it's also more creative because you can use words like, do you know how to spell supercalifragilisticexpialidocious? It's a 34-letter word, and I don't, but I can say it, and it pops up in my text or in my email or in a note. So basically what you're doing is you're alleviating barriers. I think Steve Jobs did this. He said, I think it was his mission. He said, don't back technology into the customer. Back the customer's experience into technology. And that's what I've done, is I've taken what you all have developed and backed it into my needs.
My father was diagnosed with MS in 1987. And passed away in 2005. But for many years, MS kind of removed his ability to use much of the right side of his body. He was in a wheelchair for most of the remaining years of his life. So we were always trying to look for technology and tools that would help him continue to communicate. And he enjoyed writing, but holding a pencil was no longer something that he could do with ease.
Yeah.
Typing wasn't always something that he could do for more than a few minutes at a time. So looking for text-to-speech and speech-to-text tools were something that we were always very interested in and keen on. Looking for other avenues and ways that the same tools can help a variety of people with a variety of different needs is always interesting to hear.
Right. Bookshare, by the way, bookshare.org is something that is funded by the U.S. Department of Special Education. And Jim Fluxman is the president of Bookshare. And it is a print library where all the publishers, not all, but the New York bestsellers are donated and digitally watermarked and put in a format that print disabled or people that are struggling to read can actually go and get a book or a periodical. Like if I want today's Wall Street Journal, I just go to Bookshare and I can pull up the last four issues and I can read it. So those are things that I would recommend. Also, Gutenberg is another place for books that don't have copyrights that the Library of Congress put out, the Gutenberg Project. But I'm saying out there that kids that struggle and kids that don't struggle, I think this technology doesn't stop. I think we're dyslexics are actually the pioneers of the future foundation or pathway to the future foundation of education.
Are there any other resources out there that you'd like to be sure to share with our audience?
There's for a desktop, there's Bella Boca, and then Voice Dream Reader, which was started by Winston Chen, and he's up there at MIT now. XMind is a concept mapping tool for everybody. You can plug in things along those lines. But truly, Bookshare is the saving grace of keeping me from having to scan things in. Microsoft Lens is an app in their Microsoft 365 package that you take a picture of a page and it OCRs it into a text-rich format, or actually a text format, and it can be read to you. So those are things how I go through go through my life and being able to take something that's in print and turn it into something that's consumed with the reading acceleration programs.
So, Davis, do you have any other exciting upcoming engagements that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I met Michael Ritchie at the Developers Conference, and I'm speaking at the school that he's at in, it's called the Brooks in Della Barlow. That's D-E-B-A-R-T-O-L-O, Collegiate High School. And I'm speaking there on Friday morning about the technology that I use, and I think the education platforms will come.
Fantastic. Well, Davis, thanks so much for being a guest.
Thank you.
That was Davis Graham. Davis has taken a learning issue that kept him from getting an education and turned that around to empowering him to become educated using technology. This has been the Six Figure Developer Podcast. I am John Calloway.
And I'm Clayton Hunt.